if we lose the U.S. dollar as the reserve currency, gold is going to go through the roof. And then when you look at countries and banks, whether the J.P. Morgan, Wells Fargo, Japan, China, the U.S., they're buying gold as a hedge or a storage of value. The question becomes, how much should you have in your portfolio?
Is about more than just a regular gym routine. When was the last time you checked on your financial fitness? If you're feeling like you're falling behind, Ed Sedell is here to help with The Retirement Trainer, a podcast about helping you get into better financial shape. Every week, Ed talks about things you need to know to become more financially fit for your future. Learn about things like how much money will you need, financial mistakes other people often make, and how you can avoid them. Plus, details on The Retirement Fitness Plan, a plan Ed personally created to help you get to and through retirement by focusing on five key areas of your financial life. Learn more about The Retirement Fitness Plan when you visit egsifinancial.com and click on Processes. Then subscribe, follow, and listen to The Retirement Trainer on Apple Podcasts, your iHeart app, or whichever podcast platform you prefer.
Is it time for hard assets like precious metals? If so, why should you have it as part of your portfolio? How much should you have? Why is it important? And how should you buy it when you decide to add it to your portfolio? This is Leanne Sedell, and here to help us with all our questions and give us some guidance to stay in the best financial shape possible, the retirement trainer, Ed Sedell. Hi, Ed.
Hey, Leanne.
Long time.
It has been a long time. It has. My gosh, you know, we had all those interviews and everything, and then we just kind of got out of the habit, but it's important that we're back now.
Yeah.
With everything that's going on in the world, you know, inflation, they said that it's gone. You may be from their memories, but I think it's here for a while.
Well, they lowered rates and the yield went up.
Yeah, you know, I think it's very reminiscent of April earlier this year. This market has been a very resilient market with all the conflicting noise and news back and forth. The question is, so why are yields going up? I mean, I know we're here to talk about precious metals, but, you know, why are yields going up? It has a lot to do with housing inventory. It has a lot to do with people not being able to afford houses. They're not building houses. And so banks are looking at it saying, you know what? We're not doing as many loans as we used to, so let's go ahead and charge a little bit more.
Do you start to wonder whether or not everybody's just waiting for the next?
Yeah,
and so are
yeah,
they just yeah. pausing because they're saying, if I can get another 0.5% in another month, I'll just wait another month?
Yeah. You know, when the demand for mortgages aren't there, there's not that much competition. That's a big part of it. People are like, well, you know, why would I go ahead and refinance now or buy a house now when I know rates are going to go down? And I do believe they're going to go down. I don't agree with it. But I think they're going to go down because that we have all this debt rolling over the beginning of the year, trillions and trillions of dollars, and they have to refinance it at a much lower rate than what it currently is. You know, actually, this kind of does go hand in hand with precious metals.
I actually was just going to say.
This is the whole purpose of it, because this is all inflationary. And they've been talking about inflation being, you know, below 2.5%, and that's bunk, poppycock, whatever you want to call it. I mean, that's ridiculous. Goes back to the old saying, right? There's lies, there's damn lies, and there's statistics. They're pulling out the stats that they want to prove the argument that they want. And so the jobs report that came out said, you know, it was hotter than expected, and CPI was hotter than expected. And, you know, the jobs report, people forget last year and even earlier this year, they continue to revise them downwards. Now, earlier in the summer, they revised them up. But look at the jobs that are being created.
Well, I was just going to say, aren't we talking about seasonal jobs, too? I mean, this is the time of year.
Yes, we have seasonal jobs, low-paying jobs, service jobs, and here's the big one, government jobs. That's inflationary. That's a cost center. That's an expense. The government produces nothing. The government makes no money. The only money the government has is from us. That's the tax revenue that they take from us. So anytime they add new jobs, it's nothing more than an expense adding to the national debt. So I saw a report, and I think it was on Fox Business, and then I read it in one of the journals too, that in August, we had near record high revenue for a single month of, it was over $400 billion, okay, in 1 month, which is just ridiculous. The amount of revenue that was brought in. But the deficit spending was approaching nearly half a trillion. It was like close to $480 billion. So we're spending more than double, you know, what we're taking in. That's not sustainable. So how does this have to relate to precious metals and gold? Because people always look at gold as a hedge against inflation. And I disagree with that. I don't think it's a hedge against inflation. I think it's a storage of value. And that's a really big deal, because when you think about the life that we have lived as Americans over the last several decades, you know, since the 70s, since the U.S. dollar became the reserve currency of the world. And I know you know what that is, but just to kind of explain it. So the reserve currency is that thing, goods and services based on oil, right, has to be purchased in the U.S. dollar. So that gives the U.S. dollar strength. Now, this is a big deal because under Nixon, the U.S. dollar was removed from the gold standard. So it's basically a fiat currency. It's based in the full faith and credit of the U.S. government being able to pay its debts. And if you look at what happened during World War II, not to go into a history lesson here, but we're approaching the debt adjusted for inflation. Mm-hmm. Actually, we've exceeded it from where we were in World War II. We have far exceeded it. And typically what they say, the way countries get out of debt is to print money and have a war. That's how you get out of it.
Forever wars.
Right. And unfortunately, not forever war, but you know, a big one, right? So why is the reserve currency such a big deal? Well, because it has strengthened the U.S. dollar because it has been the reserve currency. And as a result, the U.S. dollar, Americans were able to live a very high quality of standard because of the U.S. dollar. But now there's outside forces pushing against that.
Manipulation that's going on.
Well, it's manipulation, and everyone's going to go right to BRICS. Oh, look at BRICS.
Yep.
But the reason that that's happening is the U.S. government has weaponized the U.S. dollar. People are like, well, wait a minute. It's my money, and I'm not even in the U.S., and you can take my money. So now countries are looking at alternatives, and so that's really the foundation of BRICS. I'm very speaking in general terms. All right, so BRICS is Brazil, Russia, India, actually Iran and India now too, China and South America. And I think there's now over 22 other countries or 30, I think now it's over 30 countries that are wanting to join. And the reason that that's a big deal is the currency that they're looking at using is backed by gold. Okay, because a fiat currency means it's fugazi. It's just, it's not worth the paper that it's printed on, literally not worth the paper that it's printed on. And if you look at what happened to Zimbabwe, they actually issued $1 trillion notes and it took, I don't know, $10, $15 trillion to buy a loaf of bread. And then you look more recently at Argentina and most recently at Venezuela. And, you know, what happened is their currency was devalued so much and they continued to inflate. And inflation is nothing more than a hidden tax. That's really all it is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not sustainable. So because we weaponized the U.S. dollar, now there's other alternatives out there like BRICS that are going to be backed by gold. I'm not saying that that's going to be the new world currency. I think eventually the U.S. dollar is no longer going to be the reserve currency. And that is going to drastically change the way we live here in the U.S. It really is. So what options do we have? Well, the leaders, and I use that term loosely because really as a citizen by definition in the U.S., that means the government, they're there to represent us. It's a co-government between us and them, but that's not exactly what's happening. And this isn't a Republican or Democrat because it's all the way across the board. They're all spendthrifts. They just blow it all the way across the board and pick somebody and we overinflated it, overspent. So when we look at precious metals, because there is a sense of scarcity, it really is a storage of value.
And when you're talking about gold, silver, precious metals across the board, you're specifically referring to the tangible, what you can...
Physical, yeah, where you hold it, not where you buy it and then you ship it somewhere and someone else holds it, because then what, right?
I just wanted to make sure to clarify, because I think a lot of people think that they're invested in gold.
Well, yeah, right. So gold ETFs, whether they're the actual GLD spider, right? Or mining stocks. Okay. Because we do have those in our portfolio.
But you believe that they should have both.
Physical. Yeah. Yeah. You know,
obviously.
I've been buying gold. My dad got me on that and I've been buying gold since college. And I remember it was a couple hundred dollars for an ounce if I had known then what I know now, right? But, you know, even not that long ago, it was still, it had dipped all the way below 1700 an ounce. And now it's, it, you know,
26
it was,
something.
It was, I think it either got close to or intraday trading over 2700. And I said earlier this year, it was going to break 3000. If it doesn't break it this year, it's going to be pretty close. If we lose the US dollar as the reserve currency, gold is going to go through the roof. And then when you look at countries and banks, whether the JP Morgan, Wells Fargo, you look at Japan, China, the U.S., they're buying gold as a hedge or a storage of value. So the question becomes, how much should you have in your portfolio? Because that's a big question. So it kind of fluctuates a little bit. I've heard people say, oh, it should be as much as 20, 25%. And I'm not sure I agree with that. Some people say one or two. I'm not sure I agree with that either, right? In inflationary times, I'd like to see between your total portfolio between 2 to 5% and having a chunk of that as gold on hand.
I think the big question, even you circling around the amount, is where you get it. And I think that that's a very scary for a lot of how do you buy and how do you know what you have is good? And obviously silver and a lot of the, there are so many things that take advantage of people out there and knowing what's good and what's not costing them.
I agree. And you know, precious metals as a whole, so we're talking about gold, but silver is very inexpensive relatively. It wasn't that long ago where it was less than $15 and now it's 30. I saw it earlier today, 31, approaching 32. But I think it did hit a high of 36, 38 earlier this year.
Worrying about where you get it is like where I was getting to is.
Yeah. So let's talk about what you should buy first, right? I do believe in physical gold. I do not believe in small denominations. Right, buy an ounce. Buy sovereign coins. If you get a good deal on an ingot, get an ingot, as long as it's from a reputable company. But buy sovereign coins because you know exactly what it is that you're getting. Whether it's a maple leaf, Krugerrand, whatever it is, okay? Golden Eagle, it doesn't matter as long as it's a sovereign coin. Now, I am not of the school where you should buy it as a collectible for the intrinsic value in your, right? There are coin collectors out there. That's not what we're talking about. We're looking at, you know, storage of value. So everyone says, well, you know, you can't walk down the street and get a, you're not going to buy a loaf of bread for a 1 ounce coin at $3,000. You're right. But that's why you buy silver. That's where you buy the smaller denominations. And the reason is, so when you're buying gold, you're looking at anywhere from 3 to as much as 10%. I normally say 3 to 8. If there's a run on gold, you're going to be paying significantly more. But, you know, there's a premium, right, over spot price. So spot is, so let's just say if you look at gold and it's $26 an ounce and silver is $31 an ounce, that's spot, okay? Then they charge a premium over that and that's the commission, okay? And you have to shop, right? There's some very reputable online places. I think there's 4 or 5 online that I've gotten. And then there's a local shop here that has beats people every once in a while, you know, and then there's a gold broker. So we're not licensed to buy and sell precious metals. I shop around and I compare prices on the same day. Hey, based on the given spot, what is it? Now, you also have to keep in mind, if there's a run and people are panicking, right? Panic buy, you know, you're going to pay a hefty, hefty premium on that day or during that time period, you know, for that gold. You know, gold is going to excel and pull back. And can you time it? No, you know, but if you buy a little bit here and there and back it up by silver, I think you're going to really hedge your bets and you want it on hand. Again, I do not believe in buying it and having it at a custodian. And
yeah, that's important that people understand the difference there because, again,
it is not in your care, custody, and control. And when you need it, how are you going to get it?
That's right.
So we have a situation right now where somebody was referred to us and I could not, it's heartbreaking. We're trying to help her out. She's a widow. I don't know the entire situation, which is why we're going to do a call with the broker that did this, but the premium on the gold, because they never sold a full ounce. Everything was in tiny little increments and the premium was 35 to 40%. That was the premium on an ounce of gold. When you buy smaller amounts, whether it's a tenth of an ounce or a quarter of an ounce or half of an ounce, you are going to pay a little bit higher of a premium. So when I was talking about the 3 to 8%, maybe that's for an ounce. You are going to pay a little bit more, but not a 40% premium.
Yeah.
She didn't even get it. Right? It was shipped to a custodian and they charge shipping. And she's like,
there's tons of fees on that.
All these fees back and forth. And so, you know, it is buyer beware. You really need to make sure that you understand what you're doing, do your research, be comfortable with it, and understand that it really is a storage of value. And that's why when someone says, oh, it should be 10, 20, you know, 30, 50% of your net worth, well...
And the only thing that I would add to that about this particular situation is there's a lot of commercials out there, a lot of people we listen to, a lot of people that we trust what they are saying. And sometimes they don't even know what they're selling.
Well, it was like the FTX crypto, right? They got all the superstars and everything. And the superstars are like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And I do think that regardless of the commercial, regardless of where the commercial came from that instigated the buy in the first place, it's doing your research. It's not just sometimes the people that are doing the commercial, they really don't do all the due diligence that they're supposed to
do. Well, that's not their job.
No, I agree with you.
But apparently, my understanding is now with a couple of the folks that were the face of FTX, the crypto, they're to a certain degree, they're held to a certain degree of responsibility. But to your point, Leanne, I mean, here's my point. Having gold in your portfolio, having silver in your portfolio is very important. Making sure that you have physical stuff on hand, just like cash on hand. We're seeing all these tragedies around the country right now, from the Carolinas through Georgia, in Florida twice in less than a 2-week period. Having cash on hand when banks are down, being able to, the electricity is running so you can get gas, but only if you have cash. You know, there's something to be said about having cash on hand. And yeah, I'm not talking about a ridiculous amount of money, but I use my mom and dad as an example all the time.
We're going to talk about mattress money. No.
That's why we had to go through every pillowcase and sock and everything when they passed so you could find.
No.
But they always had cash on hand, right? When my dad got out of the service, even in there, right? I mean, there was no direct deposit. So to have money because you got to change the station, it'd be a while before the check caught up. So they always had cash on hand. You know, in middle school and high school, when the big storms would come, we lose power. And even when I was in college, my parents were one of the few that had cash on hand. And so they were buying groceries and filling up gas tanks for folks in the neighborhood because still right now, right, cash is king. It looks like things are going by way of the CBDC, central bank digital currency, with crypto and everything else.
Well, but that's where I was going to go next. We're sitting there talking about tangible income sources, cash, talking about silver and gold. And I'm going to just do a slight pivot. Just what are your thoughts on all this conversation regarding crypto and bringing crypto back in as I can't imagine it ever being a leading source of currency for us. But again,
I do. Not crypto, but CBDC, central bank digital currency, because it's a way of tracking every single penny that we have.
Okay.
I mean, that's the, right. So they want to displace cash so that you can't use it, because if you can't use it and they can't,
that's the China
they want
model.
To be able to track it and tax it and control it. I mean, look at what they're doing in China, and they have ultimate control over not just taxing your money, but what you're able to buy and where you're able to buy it and when you're able to buy it.
I hope you're wrong on that one. I hope that one being, you know, we the people will be able to change that. So,
well, me too. But, you know, I want to make sure that we understand that there's a difference between the CBDC and crypto. Right. So crypto is a decentralized blockchain in which there is no one agency that can control it and manage it and take it from you. I like that technology. Crypto, it's based on cryptography, really hard to break the code. I mean, that's the whole premise of that crypto, what it is. And now it's becoming more mainstream so that people can buy and sell things on a more of a daily basis. Not the loaf of bread kind of thing yet, but people are getting salaries from it. Municipalities are using it to pay salaries. You know, you're able to buy houses and cars and things of that nature, do bigger deals with it. My fear is going from the crypto in the bigger ones like the Bitcoin and Ethereum to the central bank digital currency, right? We had talked about this before, the things that keep me up at night. And you wonder, was it created? Who created it? And what was the purpose? And was it created by a government source, right, to get us used to the CBDC? Or are they now playing catch up? And the reason I coin it or position it that way, like you said, ETFs. So it's not just Bitcoin, now it's Ethereum. It's stabilizing, it's still pretty volatile, but it has stabilized the volatility of Bitcoin, the ups and downs. We're still seeing huge swings percentage-wise, but...
Well, and are we finding that people are able to get in and out it's certainly not something that I would consider liquid.
I mean, you can, especially with Coinbase and some of the other trading platforms, you can get in and out. There are companies out there that you can have it in a Roth. So the options are out there. I mean, in full disclosure, right? You and I, we have crypto in our portfolio.
Because we are all about buckets here. What bucket would crypto be in? Would it be? It's not going to be in your precious metals. That's completely.
No. So crypto, safety, income, and growth, yes, right? So yeah. The safety is the money that you need, you know, for it's not about rate of return. It's more about liquidity, accessibility, and it's there when you need it. Okay. So cash right now and a little bit of precious metal. Then you have income. Well, so that's also the conservative bucket. That's definitely not where that's at. That's going to be your Social Security, your W-2 wages, pensions, annuities, dividend income, interest income, all that. And then the growth, you know, stocks, bonds, ETFs, mutual funds, and cryptos.
And crypto.
Yep. So that's going to be in there. What percentage should it be? Completely depends on your risk tolerance. And that's, it's different with that than precious metals. So precious metals, I think, just because of where we're at as economic power and where it's looking like we're going, if we don't stop spending, you know, yeah, we need that storage of value. Whereas with crypto, I think it should be part of a portfolio, but you really have to have the risk to be able to take it because it is so very volatile. I mean, the ups and down swings can be extremely wild.
So if we're going to bring this all to a head, the only thing I was going to ask you is the election's only 2 weeks away and you got a lot
is
of people.
Two or three weeks?
I'm just saying the 5th. So we're three weeks tomorrow. 3 weeks away.
Yeah.
So with people listening right now, I just wanted to get your take on hold fast. What are your recommendations?
Yeah, look, it's all about how much you're willing to lose and can sleep at night, right? That's my favorite saying. And your risk, you know, tolerance, risk adversity. And as long as you're positioned the right way, you've got to have some stop gaps in there and everything. But I think the problem with this election is everyone's looking at it like, oh my gosh, if one side wins, the world's going to fall apart. And if the other side wins, the world's going to blow up. The market's been very resilient. I think the market is going to finish positive, higher than where it is right now, because I think bond yields are also reflecting the people's opinion that the economy is stronger than what everyone else thinks and what the feds think. I do think it's going to wind
consumer
up coming down
confidence.
A little bit. Yeah, consumer confidence. But if we keep spending money, look, we're at a precipice. We're at a tipping point. It's a debt bubble. We're overspending $1 trillion less than every 100 days. We're going to hit $36 trillion in national debt at or pretty close to the election, if not a little bit before, based on our current spend rate. And everybody, whether it's Trump or Harris, you know, they want to spend more money. Congress, you know, the House and the Senate, you know, we need representatives. We need people to represent us and say, yeah, you're right. We need to balance the budget. We need to stop spending money. Because look, this is America. I think the opportunity, I'm very optimistic on the outlook of the future for this country. I'm very optimistic no matter who runs the White House because we're Americans. You know, I'm already starting to see not only with our own clients, you know, that then own businesses, you know, and manufacturing coming back to the U.S. We're seeing people starting new businesses, which is small business. It's the lifeblood of America. So I have a very positive outlook, and I don't think people should mourn the win of the opposite side. You know, no matter what, it's going to be an opportunity. It all depends on how you look at it, if you're positioned correctly.
To be American is pretty awesome. We have an incredible country, and we should all be loving that we live in America where we have all these
Amen.
Opportunities. So if you have questions or concerns and want to know what's going on in the world around you or get some more information from Ed on how we guide and protect your financial future by making a stronger plan and a healthier retirement for you, please give us a call at EGSI Financial. That number is 614-526-4118, or you can reach us by way of our website at egsifinancial.com. Thanks, Ed.
Thanks, Leanne.
Hey, what was the last time you tested tested your fitness level, not your workout routine. I'm talking about your financial endurance. Because if saving to a 401k is the extent of your effort, it is time for you to start shaping up. And Ed Sedell is here to help you do that with the Retirement Trainer. It's his podcast to help you examine your financial stamina and learn the questions you should be asking and areas to focus on to help you get to that place you've been working so hard for, a happy, comfortable retirement. And it's not as hard as some might have made you believe. Ed's broken it down into 5 simple steps. It's the Retirement Fitness Plan, which he personally created to help clarify key areas of your financial life. Learn more about the Retirement Fitness Plan at EGSIfinancial.com. Then subscribe, follow, and listen to the Retirement Trainer on Apple Podcasts, your iHeart app, or whichever podcast platform you prefer. Investment advisory services offered through EGSI Investment Management, DBA EGSI Financial Group, a registered investment advisor. Insurance and annuities offered through EGSI Financial Services, Inc., Ohio License Number 102-0619.